Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger on Iris. We are reading the edition of February 17th, 2021. I'm Kevin Rogers. Glad to have you listening as always. Finally seeing some temperatures above zero in the Fort Dodge area at least, so that's good to see. And temperatures will be warming up by the weekend, and we'll get into a more thorough look of the long-range forecast as we draw our time together to a close. In the meantime, we'll look at today's messenger. The first article is entitled Cougar Strong. The legacies of two former Manson Northwest Webster Community School District teachers will live on with the creation of two new college scholarships for aspiring school teachers. Kindergarten teacher Tricia Larson died in early July 2020 after contracting COVID-19. A few months later, in November, former Manson Northwest Webster High School math teacher Jason Englert also died of complications caused by the coronavirus. Englert was teaching math and science to talented and gifted students in the Belmont-Clemmie Community School District. At the time of his death, he had been with Manson Northwest Webster for 6 years prior. To honor their memory and the impact they had on students, teachers Jan Nelson and Stacy Orger have created two new college scholarships for students who wish to go into teaching, one for elementary education, one for secondary education. To make the scholarships a reality, a Cougar Strong fundraiser is happening right now to raise money for the scholarship funds. We really wanted to do something for both of them because they were great teachers and very well respected, and we just wanted to honor their dedication to education and to children. This first fundraiser is the sale of Cougar Strong t-shirts, which include Larson's and Englert's initials in the logo design. The organizers wanted something that was simple but still meant something. They were not only co-workers, but they were dear friends of ours, Orger said, and we just wanted to honor them and let everyone know they have a special place in our hearts. The loss of Larson and Englert hit us very hard, Nelson said. Nelson said the goal is for these scholarships to continue for many years, so more fundraisers are being planned for the future. The link to order the t-shirt online can be found on the main page of the district's website, www.manson-nw.k12.ia.us. T-shirts are available in sizes youth small through adult XL4 or XL, or $15 each, or $3 for plus sizes. Shipping is available. As of Tuesday, 102 shirts have been ordered and more than $500 raised for the scholarships. The t-shirt orders will remain open until February 26th. Other donations to the scholarship fund are accepted at the MNW Central Office, 1030 Main Street in Manson. From Eagle Grove, one person is dead following a Tuesday morning stabbing in the employee locker room at the Prestige Foods of Iowa Pork Processing Plant, according to the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Investigators said the suspect and victim knew each other. The Wright County Sheriff's Office was called to the facility located at 3813 Iowa Highway 17 at 5:42 a.m. for a report of a stabbing. Upon arrival, deputies found a deceased person in the locker room area of the plant. The suspect, who was not identified on Tuesday, is in custody. Prestige released the following statement regarding the crime. There was an incident between two individuals resulting in a fatality at the plant in Eagle Grove this morning. The Wright County Sheriff's Office is investigating with the Iowa DCI. Due to that ongoing investigation, we defer any questions to the Wright County Sheriff's Office. The Wright County Sheriff's Office deferred questions to the DCI. No further information was available Tuesday night. Investigators were on scene throughout the morning and afternoon. The name of the victim is anticipated to be released on Wednesday. Prestige opened its sprawling $350 million plant in the spring of 2019. More than 800 people worked there. About 8,500 pigs are processed in the plant daily. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, weight limits have been placed on two Webster County bridges. New weight limits have been placed on a pair of bridges in rural Webster County. One of those bridges is on 390th Street between Hayes and Indiana Avenues. The new weight limit there new weight limits there are 21 tons for straight bed trucks, 31 tons for tractor trailers, 34 tons for trucks with two trailers. The other bridge is on 240th Street between Johnson and Kansas Avenues. The new weight limits there are 24 tons for straight bed trucks, 35 tons for tractor trailers, 36 tons for trucks with two trailers. County Board of Supervisors approved the new limits Tuesday morning. There are 184 bridges in Webster County, according to County Engineer Jamie Joel. He said a consultant inspects half of the bridges every year and develops a rating of their condition. An inspection resulted in the weight limits imposed Tuesday. Joel said 8 bridges will be replaced this year. Construction is underway on one of those bridges on 170th Street, he said. Contracts for replacing the remaining 7 bridges are expected to be awarded in March. Witnesses Describe Past Troubles is the title of the article regarding the ongoing homicide court trial going on in Webster City. As state witnesses described the warning signs of domestic abuse leading up to Andrea Sokolowski's 2018 death, the defense attempted to disparage the credibility of key witnesses and the victim herself through conversations in front of the jury and out of its presence. Conversations Tuesday showed that one witness for the state, Sokolowski's ex-husband, could potentially be an Achilles heel for their first-degree murder case against Zachary Bassett, who is accused of killing his girlfriend. Bassett began in a practice where he would pin her down, muffle her face, and then restrict her ability to breathe to the point where she would become unconscious, said Assistant Attorney General Nicole Leonard to the judge, previewing testimony to help her decide what should be heard in front of the jury and how. This was happening at least once a week while they were fighting. After hearing attorney arguments for what they should be allowed to fairly introduce per evidence rules, District Court Judge Amy Moore said she would have a decision by morning. "We're going to avoid all unringable bells," she told counsel Tuesday, statements that would not legally be allowed for the jury's consideration, but would be too late to strike from their minds as spoken by a witness. Ex-husband Aaron Sokolowski, who was married to Andrea for 17 years but stayed in touch throughout her relationship with Bassett, told attorneys she often cried when telling him about the regular occurrences of losing consciousness. Their last contact was 2 days before she died. "Everything was escalating and getting worse," he said, towards the end of a relationship he described as toxic. He supported her financially throughout the relationship by fixing slashed tires on her car, covering dental work for a tooth broken during an alleged fight with Bassett, and paying for hotels when she needed a place to stay. The judge will soon determine how much of his testimony, including a photo of her swollen face and a text that read, "You beat me up for the last time," and multiple observations of injuries during her relationship with Bassett, will be allowed in front of a jury without unfairly prejudicing it against the defendant. "We don't know the cause of those injuries," said defense attorney Michelle Wolf. "If we allow witnesses to talk about them, they'll speculate that Zach is the cause when we lack proof he's the cause." With the defense, the ex-husband was forced to pore through an affidavit he signed for their divorce, telling the court that Sokolowski falsely accused of him of domestic abuse 6 to 8 times. That file from the divorce was never included in state investigative files on the Bassett case. In addition to a 2003 conviction for filing a false report, the defense would like to admit as evidence Andrea Sokolowski's convictions for theft and felony third offense operating while intoxicated to show a pattern of dishonesty. On a previous cross-examination away from the jury, her husband testified that she had relapsed with drug use before her death. In addition to evidence of drug use, the defense would like the jury to know that the victim was a heavy drinker, not as a matter of character evidence, they say, but as a matter of mitigating the state's attempts through previous witness to show she was healthy before she suddenly died. "The state has to prove how Ms. Sokolowski died," said Wolf. "These things can contribute to an early death. I don't think state attorneys get to paint that picture and not allow us to get into the truth of the matter." Testimony from a physician assistant who examined her weeks before her death in September 2018, they said, was based on false health history information provided. Jared Foster, the victim's son, told the jury about the circumstances before and after her death that made him suspicious of Bassett. Ultimately bringing it to the attention of Webster City Police Department, he said, did nothing at first. In the 2 years following, leading up to his mother's death, Foster said he saw her 4 times and talked to her on the phone every month or two, watching bruises show up amid what seemed like constant troubles in her life. "Why didn't you let the police do the investigation?" asked Assistant Attorney General Keisha Kretzinger. "I feel that they handled the case wrong from the beginning," Foster said. "When she died, Bassett wasn't even brought in for questioning. The no-contact order was not even talked about." Working on his own, Foster recorded conversations with Bassett after the death. In 2017, he conducted an experiment in which he called his mother's cell phone, held in his own hand from his phone. The call was forwarded to Bassett's phone. The IODCI was not invited to investigate the case until early November, well over a month after the victim died. Unusual timing by Special Agent Jim Thiel's own admission. But the defense also highlighted what they believed was a nefarious intention on Foster's part, too. In a conversation on direct examination, Foster said he told Bassett about the funeral. By the end of cross-examination, he was resisting direct quotes that defense attorneys characterized as discouragement to attend the funeral. "I hate to say this to you, but I don't know how many would want you at the funeral or not," Foster said to Bassett. "If you don't think it's a good idea, I'm not going to hold it against you." After the funeral, Foster told the DCI and the state medical examiner he thought it was suspicious that Bassett did not attend. At other times, witness testimony elicited by the state simply tried to show Andrea Sokolowski's state of mind in the months leading up to her death. "She seemed to be in fear," said retired Eagle Grove police officer Wayne Boyd in front of the jury, describing an incident at the Sandman Motel in which the victim was injured. A hat parade is going to be taking place to help raise funds for a Fort Dodge woman who is battling cancer. 4 years after being diagnosed with HER2-positive breast cancer, Deb Holligan thought she had beat the disease. Fort Dodge woman had received the horrific news of her initial diagnosis after her birthday in 2016. She then spent a full year undergoing treatment and 3 more years of drug therapy. But last year, ongoing hip pain led to several doctor appointments and tests that revealed that the breast cancer had metastasized to Halligan's bones in 6 places. To help with the cost of Halligan's chemotherapy treatments, Halligan's sister, Shelley Jensen, has organized a virtual hat parade fundraiser on Facebook this week, which happens to also be Halligan's birthday week. "We wanted to do something to just kind of help her out with the high cost of her insurance deductible," Jensen said. The hat parade is also meant to lift Halligan's spirits and show her support. Supporters are asked to share their well wishes and photos of themselves with their kids or their pets wearing a hat. Her hair never grew back after her first fight with cancer, so she always wears hats, Jensen said. Through her battles with cancer, Halligan has continued working as a receptionist at Central Iowa Eye Care. Jensen said that the fundraiser's goal is to reach $6,500 to cover Halligan's insurance deductible for the year. "I'm not certain we'll get to do that, but anything that we could get that gets us closer to that would certainly be helpful," Jensen said. Donations may be mailed to Deb Halligan at Post Office Box 593, Fort Dodge 50501. Click on the button where it says More Local News. There's an updated article here that has just been posted. Authorities have identified both the victim and the suspect in homicide that occurred at Prestige Farms at Prestige Foods of Iowa, just south of Eagle Grove on Tuesday. According to the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, Wayne Smith, 50, of Fort Dodge, was found dead in the employee locker room. The Wright County Sheriff's Office was called to the scene at 5:42 a.m. Deputies identified Lucas Brown, 26, of Fort Dodge, as the suspect. Brown is charged with first-degree murder. He is being held in the Wright County Jail. According to the DCI, the victim and suspect, both employees of Prestige Foods, knew each other. The exact nature of the relationship is under investigation. Brown's initial appearance is scheduled for today. The crime remains under investigation with the Wright County Sheriff's Office and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. Upon completion of the investigation, all results will be forwarded to the Wright County Attorney's Office. The Webster County Board of Supervisors is seeking a volunteer to serve on the Civil Service Commission. That three-member commission oversees the testing process for hiring new deputy sheriffs and promotions within the Sheriff's Department. To meet the requirement that the commission be balanced between political parties, a Democrat or independent is wanted. The application for the post can be found on the county government's website at webstercountyia.gov. On the homepage, click on Departments and select Board of Supervisors to find an application for boards and commissions. Applications are due by noon on February 23rd, according to Supervisor Bob Thode. During Tuesday's meeting, the Board of Supervisors purchased some computer equipment for two Sheriff's Patrol vehicles. Two Panasonic Toughbook laptop computers were purchased from Caltech Incorporated of Baxter for $6,997.98. The two laptop docking stations were bought from Caltech for $1,527.38. The board also appointed Luke Palmer to serve as the representative of the County Attorney's Office on the Webster County Compensation Commission. That panel recommends pay increases for the county's elected officials. Utilities across the Midwest, including Corn Belt Power Cooperative, headquartered in Humboldt, implemented load control measures and temporary service disruptions to some meters on Monday and Tuesday. These highly unusual control measures were needed to protect the supply and demand balance of the electric grid, as electric demand exceeded available supply because of extremely cold weather impacting the region over several days. Many electric utilities across the country are members of one of nine regional transmission organizations and independent system operators, also referred to as power tools. These federally regulated entities work on a regional scale to coordinate, control, and monitor supply and demand on the electric grid. RTOs do not own the power grid, but they do work as air traffic controllers of the grid to ensure reliable supplies of power, adequate transmission infrastructure, and competitive wholesale electricity prices on behalf of their members. Corn Belt Power Cooperative, RTO, is part of Southwest Power Pool. SPP issued unprecedented emergency energy alert level 2 and level 3 orders to its member utilities across several states on Monday and Tuesday, calling for high levels of electric load reduction curtailment to match available supply. With the extremely frigid weather that has impacted large regions of the nation over the past several days, electric demand, mostly due to electric heat, has reached historic highs. To put it simply, there was not enough available generation or supply to meet this exceptionally high electric demand. Corn Belt Power's times of curtailment included Monday, when they curtailed 5 megawatts of load for approximately 45 minutes around the noon hour. Approximately 1,500 accounts were without power. On Tuesday, Corn Belt Power was asked to curtail 24 megawatts of load between 6:45 and 10:15 a.m. Approximately 12,500 accounts were without power at some point during the event. These outages occurred without much advance warning, as SPP manages electric supply and demand minute by minute in real time. Corn Belt Power Cooperative had minutes to shed specific electric load levels as they complied with Level 3 orders. When possible, electric utilities worked to avoid interrupting service to critical facilities. At 4:45 on Tuesday, Corn Belt Power and the SPP system was in an EEA Level 1. This means that power outages are still possible. Here's what you can do to help. You're encouraged to turn down your thermostats, cover drafty windows, avoid using large appliances like clothes washers, clothes dryers, and ovens. Turn off and unplug essential lights and appliances. The member cooperatives served by Corn Belt Power are Boone Valley Electric Cooperative in Renwick, Butler County REC in Allison, Calhoun County REC, Rockwell City, Franklin REC in Hampton, Grundy County REC in Grundy Center, Iowa Lakes Electric Cooperative in Estherville, Midland Power Cooperative in Jefferson, North Iowa Municipal Electric Cooperative in Humboldt, Prairie Energy Cooperative in Clarion, and the Raccoon Valley Electric Cooperative at Glidden. And that looks like that's all the articles. Let's go ahead and take a look at from our files. From our files shows a picture of state qualifiers for the Fort Dodge swimming team going back to 2006. And in this picture were Sanka Apati, Blake Kavanaugh, Matt Grombach, Matt McCormick, Matt O'Connell, and Alex Chang. Chase Eastwood was not in the picture, and that is from our files in 2006. In 2006, there is a picture from our files. The St. Edmunds Rose Crimmins puts pressure on the ball against Ogden in a Class 2A regional contest that was won by the Gales at a score of 58-33. That is what From Our Files has to offer. Take a quick look next at the news of record for February 17th. Police logs show on Friday two domestic calls reported a suspicious person in the 100 block of Kenyon Road. Theft, 900 block First Avenue North. Car accidents at First Avenue North and North 18th Street, 5th Avenue South, South 30th Street. Harassment, 800 block North 32nd Street. Car accident, 2000 block North 15th Street. Suspicious person, 1400 block of South 22nd Street. Shoplifter, 2000 block 5th Avenue South. Tobacco violation, 800 block North 32nd Street. Car accident, 400 block of A Street. Shots fired, 1100 block of 2nd Avenue Northwest. Hit and run, North 27th Street and North 26th Place. A shooting, 1200 block of 2nd Avenue Northwest. Hit and run, 300 block of Avenue M West. Car accident, 2800 block of 16th Avenue North. A suspicious vehicle in the 400 block of 3rd Avenue South. On Saturday, two domestic calls were reported at hit and run, 900 block of Central Avenue. Car accident, Avenue F and F Street. Burglary, 700 block of 9th Avenue North. Hit and run, 200 block of Avenue M West. Car accidents, the 3000 block of 1st Avenue South and 1900 block of Floral Avenue. Hit and run, 3100 block of 7th Avenue South, and assault in 800 block of Kenyon Road. Juvenile problems, 1200 block of South 22nd Street. Harassment, 200 block of Avenue M West. On Sunday, police reports show two domestic calls, a car accident, 10th Avenue North, North 32nd Street. Loud music, 1600 block of 8th Avenue South. Theft, 1000 block 6th Avenue North. Suspicious person, 2000 block of U.S. Highway 169. Suspicious vehicle, 1100 block of 2nd Avenue Northwest. A suspicious person near 2nd Avenue Northwest and 12th Street Northwest. A car accident, 2900 block of 5th Avenue South. A fire alarm, 1500 block 27th Avenue North. A car accident in the 1400 block of 5th Avenue South and a burglary in progress, 700 block North 20th Street. On Monday, one domestic call was reported, a hit and run in the 2700 block of 8th Avenue South, theft 200 block of Avenue O, car accidents in the 3100 block of 5th Avenue South and the 2700 block of 5th Avenue South, criminal mischiefs in the 1400 block of South 27th Street and the 300 block of Haskell Street, along with the 800 block of 7th Avenue North, theft 2300 block of North 15th Street, car accidents in the 2900 block of 5th Avenue South, 1700 block of 5th Avenue South, and the 1st Avenue North and North 20th Street area, a theft in the 100 block of North 10th Street, and a car accident in the 1400 block of 1st Avenue South. Those are the Fort Dodge police reports for this previous Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. In magistrate court on Tuesday, violation of the compulsory education law. Nicole Young, 36, of Fort Dodge, did not appear. A warrant has been issued. Anna Elizabeth Kraft, 31, of Fort Dodge, two counts, hearing set for March 10th. Child endangerment, Robert Lewis Cox, preliminary hearing February 26th. Also, domestic assault causing injury, Robert Lewis Cox, 41 of Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing also set for February 26. No insurance in an accident, Evan Leslie of Fort Dodge, fined $801.75. Tatum Lane of Gilmore City, fined $801.75. Crystal Bolton of Fort Dodge, hearing set for March 5th. I'll look next at the news of record from February 16th. I honestly don't remember reading this yesterday. Fort Dodge Police on Thursday had two domestic calls reported. Burglary, 1000 block 1st Avenue Northwest. Theft, 1500 block 4th Avenue South. Hit and run, 1400 block 6th Avenue North. Theft, 1200 block 3rd Avenue Northwest. Car accident, South 32nd Street, 5th Avenue South. Avenue H and B Street, North 15th Street, and 10th Avenue North. A suspicious person in the 1300 block 1st Avenue South. An assault in 100 block North 32nd Street. Car accidents at South 14th Street and Central Avenue, 800 block 1st Avenue South. Harassment, 1400 block 4th Avenue North. Suspicious vehicle, 700 block of Forest Avenue. Shoplifter, 3000 block 1st Avenue South. Burglary, 1400 block 3rd Avenue North. Car accidents at the 1600 block of 6th Avenue North and Maple Drive and Midway Boulevard. Theft in the 10 block of Triton Circle, and a car accident in the 2200 block of 5th Avenue South. Magistrate Court from last Thursday, Philip Leroy Farmer Jr., 41 of Fort Dodge, driving under suspension, fined $491.25. Failure to obtain traffic control device, $287.88. Operating a non-registered vehicle, $175.75. No proof of insurance, fined $615.63. Operating while intoxicated, first offense, Lucas Ivan Moore, 27 of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing set March 3rd. False report to 911 call, Lucas Ivan Moore, continued 180 days. First degree arson, Kiana Sanina Garrett of Cedar Rapids, preliminary hearing set for February 19th. Also charged with first-degree harassment, fourth-degree criminal mischief, assault with a dangerous weapon, first-degree burglary, and violation of a no-contact order. Either preliminary hearing set for February 19th on those charges, or they might have been continued 180 days. On Friday, domestic assault, first offense, Esteban Procopio Anselm Borrell, 32 of Fort Dodge, hearing set for February 22nd. Kelsey K. Traeger, 25 of Fort Dodge, for assault, preliminary hearing waived, transferred to district court. On Saturday, failure to appear, Stephanie Bolden of Fort Dodge, transferred to district court. Violation of no contact order, two counts, Joey Martinez of Fort Dodge, hearing set for February 24th. Operating while intoxicated, Dreamsome Repwack of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing March 5th. Simple assault, Autumn Thayer of Fort Dodge, 7 days suspended. Probation violation, Caleb Jondo of Fort Dodge, hearing date to be determined. Terry Randall of Lorenz, hearing date to be determined. Failure to appear, Caleb Jondo, hearing date to be attended to be determined, Miranda Tomlinson, hearing date to be determined, possession of methamphetamine, Miranda Tomlinson, no preliminary hearing waived, no valid driver's license, Terry Randall, Lorenz, continued 180 days, operating a non-registered vehicle, Terry Randall, assault with intent to commit sexual abuse, Robert Schlisky of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing set for February 25th, assault on persons in certain occupations, Robert Schlisky, hearing set for February 25th. Angela Danielson, driving under suspension, fined $443.75. Also no insurance, Angela Danielson, Fort Dodge, fined $433.75. Unlawful passing of a school bus, Sarah Vila of Fort Dodge, hearing set for March 5th. And maximum gross weight violation, three counts, Dean Fryer of Fort Dodge, hearing set for March 5th. That is the court record for February 16th. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and now it is time to look at today's obituary page. Eugene V. Baker. Eugene V. Baker, 91, of Fort Dodge, died Saturday, February 13th at Friendship Haven. Services are Saturday, February 20th at 11 o'clock at Holy Trinity Church with Monsignor Kevin McCoy officiating the Mass of Christian Burial. Burial will be in Corpus Christi Cemetery with military rites conducted by VFW Post 1856 and the U.S. Navy Honor Guard. Visitation is 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Holy Trinity Church. Gene is survived by his sons, Gary and Vicky, Dennis and Jane, Gordon, Greg, Doug and Jackie, David and Molly, 15 grandchildren, 26 great-grandchildren with one on the way, and siblings Bonnie Mathis and Karen Johnson. He's preceded in death by his parents, Al and Ellen Allison Baker, his wife Mildred in 2005, an infant sister, Shirley Baker, and his brother, James Baker. Eugene Verlin Baker was born February 18, 1929 in Pocahontas. As a young child, his family moved to Fort Dodge. He attended school and then enlisted in the United States Navy. He served during World War II until his honorable discharge in 1949. On February 6, 1952, he was united in marriage to Mildred Gurnap. Gene worked for the United States Postal Service for over 34 years. He was a member of Holy Trinity Church, the Knights of Columbus, the VFW, and NARFE. Gene was also past president of the APWU Local 317. He enjoyed fishing, hunting, and golfing, but most of all, he loved time spent with his family. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be left to Holy Trinity Church or to Hospice of Fort Dodge. Thomas Baker. Thomas Ryan Baker died suddenly February 14th at the age of 47. He leaves behind his daughters Lizzie and Eva, who were his two proudest achievements, of which there were many. Visitation is Thursday, February 18th from 4 to 8 at Gunderson's, and funeral services will be Friday, February 19th at 1 p.m. at Grace Lutheran Church. Tommy was born January 11th, 1974. In Bar Harbor, Maine, but lived most of his life in Fort Dodge and most recently Pocahontas. He is survived by his mother, Sharon Johnson, stepfather, Kent Johnson, and brother, Stephen Baker, daughters, Elizabeth Baker and Eva Baker, and their mother, Amy Pressler, stepfather, Tom Richardson, and his children, Todd and Tanya, and his step-grandmother, Dorothy Erickson, who is preceded in death by his father, Thomas Allen Baker Jr., his infant niece, Sydney Baker, his grandparents, Ted and Betty Erickson, and Thomas Allen Baker Sr. and Ruth Baker. Tommy graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High in 1992 and went on to earn a bachelor's degree from UNI, where he also played on the college hockey team. In 2008, he was united in marriage to Amy Calvert, and their blended family included daughters Taylor and Josie Sherborne. The couple later divorced in 2014. He worked mostly in sales and finance for car dealerships his adult life, but was pursuing a different line of work at the time of his death. Tommy had many wide and varied interests, but first and foremost was his love of music, soccer, landscaping, and meeting new people. He made and created music in his spare time and played several instruments. He traveled overseas several times and particularly loved Germany and spoke the language fluently. He was the GOAT, or greatest of all time, at finding wild asparagus and gladly shared his bounty with those lucky enough to know him. He was a talented landscaper who loved to get his hands in the dirt and loved to work with his hands whenever he could. He lived life to the fullest while he was on this earth, which was cut short way too soon. He will always be remembered for his huge grin and devotion to his friends and family and the great love he had for his daughters. From Humboldt, Robin Beckley. Robin T. Beckley, 65, of Barnum, died Saturday evening, February 6th, at the Paula J. Beaver Hospice Home. She is survived by her husband, Greg, daughter, Amber, and son, Brian, two grandchildren, Brooks and Elliot, and brother, Mark and Jody Giddings. She was preceded in death by her parents, a stillborn sister, Christina Giddings, and brother, Paul Giddings. Services will be held at a later date. Mason Linhart Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. from Brett Mary Lou Boothroyd. Mary Lou Boothroyd, 73, of Brett, died Monday, February 15th at Westview Care Center in Brett. Services will be held at a later date. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that completes our obituary page for today. Heading over to the sports section, it's go time. Another busy week ahead for the Dodgers at state tournament. Dodger Wrestling. Bobby Thompson knows what his fourth-ranked wrestling team can do on the mat, but it's what his student-athletes have helped him build as a program year in and year out, which makes this a truly special run. For six straight years, the Dodgers have placed in the top three of the traditional state tournament. There have always been graduation losses, but a couple of pieces have always returned to bridge the gap. That consistency has extended to tradition during an unprecedented era of success. Since 2015 alone, the Dodgers have brought back 42 state medals, including 12 individual championships. In 2020, the Dodgers earned 8 medals, the second most in school history. 4 senior medalists are back this season, along with 2 other state qualifiers. The cohesiveness of this group is tremendous, as it has been for basically the last decade, said Thompson. Seniors Drake Ayala, Drayson Phillips, Lane Cowell, and Cody Cook have helped this program earn a lot of points while leading these younger wrestlers along the way. We've had great leadership throughout our program in recent years. Guys like Tristan Lara, Sam Cook, Brody Teske, Drew Bennett, Cade Lara, Damon Lochner, Eric Birnbaum. That's carried over to Carson Taylor and now Drake and the others. That is what this makes this program special. The community and myself have been spoiled. It has been phenomenal to see in this program. We have produced great wrestlers and even greater men. We have 4 guys competing at the Division I level at Northern Iowa, Carson Taylor at NAIA and Jonah Aigley, along with Sam Cook, who just finished up at Iowa. 5 of the 6 returning state participants are back from a year ago, along with 4 newcomers. Cal at 120, Ayala 132, Phillips at 145, and Cook are the linchpin. The senior quartet has 13 state appearances combined. They earned 7 medals and won 2 state championships with 3 finals appearances. The foursome has combined for 436 career victories. The Dodger program is about so much more than wins, though. We had the entire team standing mat side when Price Sean Mosley, a first-year wrestler, was in his wrestleback to qualify for state at districts last Saturday, Thompson said. When he didn't make it, everyone was devastated. When Matt Searles Davis advanced as a senior with a 9-16 record, everyone was cheering. Getting 9 down is great, but it hurts not having the other 5 there. I remember last season when Carson Taylor was getting a medal as a senior and Drake was getting choked up. They truly want each other to succeed. Fort Dodge heads to state with 5 district champs and 4 runners-up. 7 of the 9 qualifiers received top 6 seeds at Wells Fargo. Phillips at 22-4 has 92 career victories, is the top seed at 145. Ayala at 28-1 is the number 2 seed at 132. Cal 25-4 and Cook 23-3 earned 3 seeds at their respective weights. Junior Ben Aigley 18-8 is number 4 at 182, along with freshman Drew Ayala, who is 25-4 at 106. Returning state qualifier Max Bishop, 18-2, is 6th at 113. Senior Matt Searles Davis, 9-16, and freshman Demarion Ross, 20-15, are 16 seeds at 170 and 138 pounds, respectively. I thought we did okay in the seeding. Some of the other teams getting better seeds may hurt us for the quarterfinals. It gave us some tougher matchups right away. Ayala, who is 3rd on the Dodgers' all-time win list, has 164-3 in his career. The future Iowa Hawkeye will face Ankeny's Carter Davis, 7-3 in the first round. Ayala pinned Davis in the district finals. He moved to 132 for the postseason, despite being the nation's number 1 126-pounder. Over the past 4 seasons, Ayala has developed into a true program leader. Drake is very unique in his mindset. He is self-motivated and driven by the next challenge, never satisfied, Thompson said. He came in as an undersized freshman and finished 2nd to a Division I wrestler in 2018. I've coached a lot of state champions, but I've never seen anything quite like this, who is willing to put it all on the line night in and night out. He truly has that growth mindset, which makes him better than everyone else. The Dodgers open the traditional state tournament on Thursday at 1:30. They open the state duels tournament on Wednesday when four-seeded Dodgers face number 5 North Scott at 9 a.m. The 9th-ranked Lancers, who have 7 rated wrestlers, qualified 8 for the traditional tournament. The winner will face either number 1 Waverly Shellrock or number 8-seeded Lynn Marr at 1:30. On the other side of the bracket is number 2 Southeast Polk, number 3 Waukee, number 6 Bettendorf, and number 7 Norwalk. The Dodgers and Lancers will have 4 ranked matchups. We are going to get after it, Thompson said. We don't match up great with them top to bottom, but it should be an entertaining duel with some big matchups before traditional state. The tough thing for us is we could also see North Scott a few times in the quarterfinals of the traditional tournament. This will be great for Carter Forbes, Cal Hartman, Prishan, Austin Reed, and Keaton Nichols. Other than Carter, they're all underclassmen, so it'll be good for them to get this kind of big-time experience. And back to the main page of the Messenger Sports section, Class 1A area athletes are thinking big. To be successful, Jaden Sword knew he was going to have to work harder when no one was looking. The South Central Calhoun Jr. spent countless hours honing his craft in the wrestling and weight room that benefited the 220-pounder on both the mat and football field. We all wrote down 3 goals at the beginning of the year. Mine were to be conference champion. They finished 2nd in Twin Lakes Conference. 2, to have 40 wins. I have won 50 matches. And 3, make it to state the first time. It means a lot to go because I've worked really hard to get to this point. Sword, 50-7 for the year, along with Titan teammates Blake McAllister and Kevin King, will represent SCC in the Class 1A field. Action begins at 9 o'clock on Thursday. It has definitely been a fun season. The team was fun, and we accomplished a lot together and as individuals, Sword said. I have to give props to my practice partner, Blake McAllister. He pushed me beyond what I thought I could ever do, and I thank him for that. Along with the rest of the team for not only having my back, but having everybody else's. We were special that way. The junior classmates have ended their last 2 athletic seasons on the big stages, competing in the Unidomes for state football and now Wells Fargo Arena. It's really cool to be able to go to the Dome, Cedar Falls, and the Well in the same year. I definitely have to give props to our team for always believing in me. Sword, a third-team All-State linebacker, will face 5th-ranked Cole Kelly of West Hancock. Kelly was a sectional runner-up, losing to 2nd-ranked Cole Clark of Hinton in the district final. King is no stranger to state after having qualified a year ago. The Titan Jr. was 43-7 as a sophomore. It's definitely awesome going to the state tournament. To be able to wrestle in an environment like Wells is a twice-in-a-lifetime experience. All of my brothers only made it once in their careers, and this is already my 2nd time, so I kind of have bragging rights over them. King will score off with Jessup's Jarrett Delagardel in the 1st round. I've lost a couple close matches here or there, and I don't plan on letting that happen to me at state. I've had to bounce my weight around for the team a little bit throughout the season, but it was worth it in the end. The 4th-rated McAllister has been to the state tournament all 3 seasons of his career. He finished 6th a year ago, going through a gauntlet of top-ranked wrestlers. McAllister, who was a qualifier as a freshman, will meet Akron Westfield's Lane Kenny in the first round of the state tournament. From West Bend Mallard's 3rd-ranked junior Donovan Hansen got a taste of the state tournament a year ago under the first-year head coach Peyton Rice. Rice, a 4-time state qualifier for Manson Northwest Webster, has helped Hansen gain momentum in building toward a championship run. Coach Rice has helped me a lot these last 2 years for showing me new stuff, Hansen said. He also helped me with what I need to work on in the room, keeping me healthy and taking care of my back. Hansen, 38-1, suffered his first loss in the district finals to unbeaten and top-ranked Braden Graff of West Sioux. He will face Wilton's Garrett Burkle in the opener. The Wolverine is 68-7 the past 2 seasons. It means everything to be back down here in my final year. It means I still have that one last chance to take home a state title. Loss of district sucks, but I know what needs to be fixed and improved upon now, and I hope to see him Friday night in the finals because I think that's where we'll be. Second-ranked Dane Johnson at 285 has only been in the wrestling for 3 seasons, but has already become a state title threat for Pocahontas area. Johnson, 13-4-2, was fifth a season ago and earned the number 2 seed to face Aiden McFadden of Baxter in the first round. The All-State lineman, who will play football at Grandview University next year, has 94 career wins. Junior Tice Ruffage at 120 comes from a state title lineage. He is the younger brother of former Pocahontas area state champion Shea Ruffage and Ellie Ruffage, a 2-time state champion basketball player and current Missouri State University guard. Ruffage, 29-6, will face 9th-rated Callan Smith of West Hancock in the first round. East Sac County Raiders seniors Garrett Quirk at 160 and Justin Rupnow at 285 will finish on the big stage in their final season. Quirk, 33-16, takes on second seed Gabe McGough of MFL Marmac in a 160-pound opener. Rupnow, 30-10, will compete against junior Devin Whipple, 45-4, of Bellevue. From North Union, 9th-ranked Trevor Cruz at 285 will compete in his first state tournament for the Warriors. The senior faces Pleasantville senior Matthew Kaufman, 30-5, in the first round on Thursday. So we'll have plenty of wrestling results to talk about when we get together on Thursday. 4th-ranked Iowa Central volleyball team swept Nyack to improve to 9-0. With a key top 10 matchup looming on the horizon, 4th-ranked Iowa Central volleyball team did not look past Nyack Tuesday night in the Hodges Fieldhouse. Instead, the Tritons continued to sweep through the ICCAC, easily taking down the Trojans by scores of 25-16, 25-19, and 25-22. Caitlin Steffes led the way for Iowa Central, 9-0 overall for the year with 12 kills, 11 digs, and 2 aces, while Keely Anderson and Hale Al-Harithi each added 10 kills and 4 total blocks. Tritons are set to meet number 9 Des Moines area in Boone Thursday night. Earlier this season, Iowa Central swept the Bears at home. "We are really in a big 4-week stretch of matches," said Iowa Central head coach Sarah Horn. "We've got 2, sometimes 3 in a week, but these girls are excited for that and excited for the challenge that we will face in DMAC." Steffes, who is already closing in on 100 kills for the season, had 3 in the first set, 5 in the second, 4 in the third. Alicia Johnson picked up 36 assists with 11 digs and an ace. Johnson entered the night ranked 4th in the nation in assists. "Alicia does a great job of getting the ball to the player in the best position," Horn said. "We really have a lot of great players that can have big games, and she does a tremendous job of reading early on who to get it to. It's really hard to defend us." Angel Baylark added 7 kills, with Bailey Dugan and Johnson each tipping in 2. Baylen Johnson had 11 digs and 2 serving aces, with Carly Eckert adding 2 aces. Iowa Central has now won 11 consecutive league matches and are 25-1 in conference play. They are also 51-10 at home since the start of the 2016 season. DMAC posted a 3-0 victory over Southeastern Eastern Tuesday night. The Bears, who are led by former Triton head coach Patty Harrison, have won their last 8 since the loss to Iowa Central. Fort Dodge Senior High opens their second season at home. Fort Dodge tips off its Class 5A postseason action at home against Sioux City North. The contest is scheduled at 7 o'clock in the Fort Dodge Gym. The winner heads to number 15, Sioux City East, for a Region 4 semifinal Saturday night. The Dodgers are 7-9 overall and winners of 4 straight games. Head coach Scott Messerly's squad has defeated Des Moines Lincoln, Des Moines Hoover, Des Moines East, and Marshalltown consecutively by 184 points. Juniors Tori Bennett and Alea Palmer lead the Dodgers statistically. Bennett moved into the top 20 on the program's all-time scoring chart last week by clearing the 500-point hurdle in her 3rd season of varsity play. The Stars are currently 1-20. They have dropped 14 in a row since a 62-36 victory over Council Bluffs Thomas Jefferson on December 21st. Fort Dodge is attempting to win 8 games in a season for the first time in 4 years. The Dodgers have logged 4 straight victories for the first time since 2006-2007. No Fort Dodge Senior High squad has taken 5 in a row since 2001-2002. Sioux City East lost to Lamar's 52-49 and Sioux Falls O'Gorman 65-33 before closing the regular season with a 43-38 win over Sergeant Bluff Luton. Fourth-ranked Southeast Polk is the top seed in the region. The championship round will be on Tuesday at a site to be determined. Newell Fonda ousted the girls. St. Edmund girls. C.J. Tracy wants to build the St. Edmund girls into a program that is competing like what Newell Fonda already has created. The second-ranked and two-time defending champion Mustangs showed off all their skills Tuesday night in Newell, topping the Gales 100-17 in a Class 1A Regional 2 contest. This was a great way for us to start the postseason, said Newell Fonda head coach Dick Youngers. Our kids did a great job of attacking on defense, and offensively we moved the ball well and knocked down a lot of shots. We had a lot of different people step up and make plays for us. We ran into a machine, said Coach Tracy of St. Edmunds. They are on a mission that is an established program and has lost 2 games in 4 years with 2 state titles and a runner-up. Coach Jungers has built that program, and they just keep feeding it. For the Gales, 4-17 for the year, Leah Neverman scored 6 points, with Aubrey Bimrick adding 3. Leah Johnson, Kelly Kirsten, Kirsten Clark, and Casey Krutoff each chipped in 2. We showed moments where we were competing, and we showed moments where we were looking lost, said Tracy. We just couldn't execute what we wanted to execute. Give Newell Fonda for credit for that. The game marked the final time in a St. Edmund uniform, basketball uniform, for Neverman, Bemrick, Johnson, Kirsten, Krutoff, Avery Gallis, and Sydney Ingalls. We talked after about what these seniors have done for this program, Tracy said. They have started to change the culture for us. The record might not show it, but we competed in almost every game. The stands were filled when the restrictions were lifted and the crowd was in it. The culture around this program has been changed, and that is a credit to these seniors. Newell Fonda will face Audubon on Friday in Newell. Audubon at 16-7 for the season, topped Glidden-Ralston by a score of 45-40. Let's look at the hot corner on this date, 1941. Joe Louis knocks out Gus D'Arezzo in the second round in Philadelphia to defend his heavyweight title. In 1974, Richard Petty wins the second straight Daytona 500. It's the fifth Daytona 500 title for Petty, who also won in 64, 66, 71, and 73. In 1994, San Antonio's David Robinson records the fourth quadruple-double in the NBA with 34 points scored, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 blocks in the Spurs' victory over Detroit. In 1998, the United States women's hockey team wins the sport's first Olympic gold medal. Sandra White scores on an empty netter with 8 seconds left to give the United States a 3-1 victory over Canada. In 2010, Americans Lindsey Vonn and Julia Mancuso finish 1-2 in the downhill at the Vancouver Olympics. It's the first time since 1984 that the U.S. won gold and silver in women's alpine event. And in 2013, Danica Patrick wins the Daytona 500 pole, becoming the first woman to secure the top spot for any Sprint Cup race. The Messenger poll question for the week: did you pay any attention to the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump? To render an answer, go to messengernews.net. This date in history. It is Wednesday, February 17th, the 48th day of 2021. There are 317 days left in the year. On this date in 1815, the United States and Britain exchanged the instruments of ratification for the Treaty of Ghent, ending the War of 1812. On this date in 1801, the United States House of Representatives broke an electoral tie between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr. Electing Jefferson president, Burr became vice president. In 1863, the International Red Cross was founded in Geneva. During the Civil War, the Union ship USS Housatonic was rammed and sunk in Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, by the Confederate hand-cranked submarine H.L. Hunley in the first naval attack of its kind. The Hunley also sank. In 1994, during World War II, U.S. forces invaded Eniwetok Atoll, encountering little initial resistance from Imperial Japanese troops. The Americans secured the atoll less than a week later. In 1964, the Supreme Court in Wasbury versus Sanders ruled that congressional districts within each state had to be roughly equal in population. In 1972, President Richard M. Nixon departed the White House with his wife, Pat, on an historic trip to China. In 2006, Tanja Frieden of Switzerland won the Olympic women's snowboard cross, speeding past America Lindsay Jacobellis, who'd fallen on her next-to-last jump before the finish line. In 2015, Vice President Joe Biden opened a White House summit on countering extremism and radicalization, saying the United States needed to ensure that immigrants were fully included in the fabric of American society to prevent violent ideologies from taking root at home. In 2018, President Donald Trump's National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, told a conference in Germany that there was now incontrovertible evidence of a Russian plot to disrupt the 2016 election. 10 years ago, a group of Democratic Wisconsin lawmakers blocked passage of a sweeping anti-union bill, refusing to show up for a vote, and then abruptly leaving the state in an effort to force Republicans to the negotiating table. Iowa high school wrestler Joel Northrup defaulted on his first-round state tournament match rather than face Cassie Herkelman, one of the first girls ever to qualify for the event, saying that wrestling a girl would conflict with his religious belief. 1 year ago, Amazon founder Jeff Bezos said he planned to spend $10 billion of his own fortune to help fight climate change. And real quickly, there is a boil water advisory issued for the city of Lehigh until further notice. That announcement was made by Dylan Hagen, Webster County Emergency Management Coordinator. Looking at the forecast real quick, partly sunny on Thursday with a high of 14. Friday, high of 17, and Saturday, a high of 24, Sunday, mostly cloudy, 32, mostly sunny on Monday, high of 38, Tuesday, a high of 39, again, under sunny skies, so hopefully we'll do some melting. That'll bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for February 17th, 2021. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you for spending this time with me today. I look forward to visiting with you again next time here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay warm, and we'll talk to you again real soon here on IRIS. Bye-bye for now.